Everybody, thank you. It's Wednesday, 20th September. It's 6:30 in the evening. This is the Climate Change and Environment Scrutiny Committee. I'm the chairman. My name's Michael Slater. I'm very pleased that you all come this evening. If you've not been before, you're very welcome. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And the first thing on the agenda is to receive apologies.
Thank you, Chairman. We've received apologies from Councillor Mrs. Ashcroft and Councillor Kim Smith as well.
Okay. Thank you. Item two, declarations of interest, if any. Does any Councillor have any declarations of interest to declare on the items under discussion at this evening's meeting?
Topically, I might declare an interest in the future of human civilization.
Yeah. Thank you, Mick. Any other declarations? No? Thank you very much. Okay, thank you kindly, Mick. Right, we'll now go on to item three, to consider any urgent business brought forward to the meeting under Rule 12. I'm not aware of any urgent business at this meeting. Anybody else? No? Thank you. Item four, questions from the public. We have not received any questions from the public. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to mention the question we had last time from Janet Hawkins about sewage in the rivers, and we did say we might consider this as a topic for investigation later on during our where have we gone? Forgive me. During our scrutiny review programme. So I just want you to bear in mind that I think is still an option. We obviously will come to it later on. And as regards, if I may trouble you to say more about this, we did get a reply. I was pleased to get a reply. I was a bit disappointed that it's a minor thing. It's pedantic, perhaps, that they spelt the cabinet member's name slightly wrong. But not to worry about that. I don't think he's greatly offended by it. And also, I noticed that it only really referred to the council's business in regard of new developments, new housing developments, whereas I think there is more in that we could discuss and certainly we could investigate if we wish. But apart from that, I don't want to say any more about that unless, of course, anybody else does want to say any more about that. No? Okay. Thank you. Item five is questions from members of the committee. We have received a set of questions on something, a fly tipping, which are raised by myself. You will all have a copy and receive the questions and respond. Well, we've got a copy of the questions, haven't we? Again, I've read this. I'm reading this at the same time as you are, members. Okay, so again, a bit like the answer we got to the previous question from the question last time from members of the public. You've only got a little while. You've only had this presented to you today, haven't you? So you've not had a great deal of time to read or understand this. If it might help if I give you a bit of background as to why I raised this question. This was principally due to my efforts to get the email address to work properly, because people in the street were stopping me, telling me about fly tipping events, and I say to them, well, report it on this website, and of course, on this email, because I tried it, it didn't work repeatedly. I think it may have been, I'm sorry if I'm talking too fast, it may well have been a case of me not having the right computer skills to set my computer up properly, but I was repeatedly told the website was working, it wasn't working for my, but it's been solved since. The great joy of using the community.civilenforcement website, email address as you see there, is that you can send a photograph of whatever the item is. Whereas if you report it on the website, you can't do that, and there's a lot of things on there to get in the way. Obviously, you can ring up and tell people, but I really like, you know, to send people a photograph. So it works now, which is good. I'm pleased about. I did particularly want a bit of a breakdown, really, on. It says here, weekly type, street number out, outside number six. Yeah, I did want a bit more detail, perhaps, on how well The council receives reports about fly tipping, and I'm looking at this reply I've got now. Does he actually say who the reply is from? I'm just looking at the moment. Let's have a look. Nicolate, Tart Street.
If I may share it.
Go, yes, please go on.
The response has come through the council's enforcement manager.
All right. Thank you.
Against the queries raised. I think if there's a supplemental that we want to take away for a further response or a more detailed response, you know, for example, if there are statistics that you want, maybe it's helpful to identify, you know, a period of time that would cover what you would like to see, and then we can get that dealt with more thoroughly if that's what the committee would like.
Okay. I mean, again, please forgive me. As I said last time, I'm new to the agenda system, the agenda of committee system, how it works. You did say, James, last time that if we have any pressing questions, we can, of course, do it without going through putting it on the agenda here, sort of thing, you know. And I'm really wondering what the value of doing it in this particular method is, you know, questions from the members of the committee, unless, of course, it is. I mean, I could include a committee in my email, couldn't I? I could find a problem to ask a member of the cabinet or an officer about, and I could copy it all into it anyway, couldn't I, without doing it in this particular format. I could do that. So you would all know, I suppose, if it's on here, I take it, you get that same kind of notice about questions and response, but also, as it's a public record, it's on public record. So that is the only advantage I can see in doing it in this particular way. Again, I hope I'm not sounding unkind, but it would really be nice if we had a bit more notice of the answer, a bit like, again, I'm going back to Janet Hawkins' question about sewage in the rivers. If we had a bit more notice of the answer, surely we've got more time to think and scrutinise it more thoroughly, haven't we? And raise subsequent questions, rather than having to be sort of rushed into reading it now and thinking of all these things straight away. That's my only observation. So again, I won't say more about it than that.
Just to say, Chair, as we discussed at the last meeting, the process here is something that's set out in the Constitution, and it covers the same as full council, for example. So it's a process that flows down through the committees. So there's an opportunity there, and I think when we spoke previously as well, it's something worth mentioning as well that, you know, if people want time to digest the questions, you know, follow-up questions and things, you know, there's no clock ticking on these things. So we get to the end of the meeting today, that doesn't stop a supplemental question coming in at any point after that, whether it's through this committee or through the responder of the question as well. So, you know, let's bear that in mind as well, that we don't have to, you know, call it quits, if you like, when we get to the end of a conversation or an agenda item. So I think the cabinet members and officers are always happy to respond to questions that members do have, and as you've rightly said, questions can be posed outside of this committee meeting in any case, so that's absolutely something we can do.
Okay. Thank you for that, James. Thank you. At this point, and does anybody else want to say anything about the fly tipping questions I've raised here? Anyone else from them? Thank you, Councillor Jones. Welcome. Thank you for coming, by the way. Thank you for coming.
I was coming on because some time ago I had a look at and was made aware of a Love Clean Streets app, and that was for Camden Borough Council or whatever they may be. And you could use Love Clean Streets for reporting any of these fly tipping issues. You could use it for reporting, you know, any problems with streets, litter, and all the rest of it. And because the app was there, you just took your photo, it knew where you were, and he reported it in. And to me, that was a brilliant idea, and I've never yet got anyone to be really interested in it here. But heck, so I'll just chuck that in now. Okay.
Thank you. That's in Camden, is it? Camden, brilliant. Thank you. Well, I'll be pleased to look at that. That sounds good. Again, if it's the means of making it easier for the public to respond to fly tipping, I'm sure that's in all our interest, isn't it?
It's an easy way of reporting it. You're collecting lots more data about where it is and what have you. You must be, because you know people are using the app and what have you. And I think it could be pretty beneficial, really. And you know, people could actually, the council could actually post the photograph of when they've done the job as well, when it had been remedied. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be good?
Brilliant. Thank you for that. Thank you very much. Anybody else want to say anything else? Yes, yes, Councillor.
I've missed several meetings, so the information is probably out there somewhere. Part of our manifesto approach is to have a flight-in vehicle ready for emergency collection. I guess there are emergencies for the collection of the flight-in. Is that vehicle on the streets, or is it still in?
I can't give you an answer to that. I don't know. I'm hoping maybe there was something in the action plan that we can see.
I guess that, because it's okay having an efficient way of reporting, but we also need an efficient way of responding.
Yes.
If it's sluggish or what have you, then it builds up a degree of frustration even further, because it's being reached now having to be reported.
Yes. Yeah. I think your question then really ought to be given to Councillor Fletcher Antes, who's head of environment, who's cabinet member for environment. I'm asking where we are with that, unless anybody else here knows. Yes, Mr. Tinsdale, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think a very good idea on the app as well, Councillor. I have come across it, but I don't think it's so much the reporting for us which is the issue. Obviously, the reports come in, we respond to the report. I think the evidence gathering is the hard part. It's if we don't find evidence which we can link to the perpetrator, it's then hard to follow up afterwards. So we're then left as a council to clean up the mess. And to be fair, we respond to it quite quickly. We let our guys know, and they're out there cleaning up the mess. Though, in terms of the vehicle and the corporate target, I might be missing it. Have you spotted anything, James? I know there's an expectation that we increase in terms of the amount of flight tips that we respond to, and that's quite an easy one to achieve, but I'm looking at the latest version of the corporate plan, and I'm looking under community regulatory services and also environment and climate change, but I can't see one which refers to a vehicle, but it might be assigned elsewhere.
I mean Councillor Kipp is right, it was certainly in the manifesto, wasn't it?
It might be being dealt with by another colleague, but I can see Councillor Halton's got her hand up.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, with regards to manifesto, my memory of our manifesto is that it was around enforcement and CCTV in areas that are repeatedly being reported for flight tipping. That was my memory and recollection of the manifesto.
Right.
Not an actual vehicle.
Yeah, and that's what... Thank you, Councillor Halton. That's what we've been focused on. That's what we've put first two things on my corporate plan.
Please go ahead.
So,
yes.
If I can just.
That's a question. It does say introduce a mobile flight tipping removal vehicle. Yes, it doesn't specify. Forgive me. It would tour the borough. Yes, you're right. It reads as what you say, Councillor Huckabee. Right, it does. Yeah.
Thank you, Councillor Huckabee. And what I would say is that I suppose what flows from that first part of the corporate plan are the objectives, and perhaps there has been a little bit of refinement along the way before we hit the objectives, because we've got vehicles that pick up the fly tip. We respond to it quite quickly, so maybe do clarify with the leader.
This does not need refinement. This is perfection.
I'll say no more on that, but as the content makes its way through to the corporate objectives, it might be that Mick has looked at it with Andy and thought, well, actually, we've got enough vehicles, we're responding to the fly tips, what do we need a vehicle for? But double check with Mick and I'll do the same.
Yes, please.
So just to clarify as well, there is a target in the corporate plan, which is target reference GD10, which is tackling environmental crime, introduce a mobile fly tipping removal vehicle. So that is there in the corporate plan.
Yeah.
You'll see when we get to that item on the agenda later on today in terms of performance, there's an update there which says at the end of quarter one, they were considering vehicle options, continuing to monitor performance with current level of resource. There's a target date of reviewing progress in December of 2023, and the update is that that is on track to be achieved.
Thank you. That sort of clarifies that. Is that okay, Councillor Gabby? Okay. Any more on this item? Yes.
Just to add, I don't know about other wards, but certainly in Eton and the Burton ward, between councillors, the three councillors, we've reported at least 7 flight tip-in incidents, and with positive response. So we have used the email that's been detailed on that. So I can say they're very happy with her. The response has gone straight through to the department through Louise Weston, I believe, as correspondent.
Oh, okay.
And within days. They've gone.
Very good. Thank you for reporting. I'm very pleased with that.
That's work, which I'm very, very happy to report. And Burton Town Centre around the Milton Street and Cross Street area.
Good. Thank you. I mean, likewise. Since I've got the email address functioning again, we've had success in Winning Street, which was becoming Fridge Alley. It's a bit less Fridge Alley now. It's still a little bit, but getting better. Any more questions or any more comments on this matter? Okay, thank you. We'll move on. Item 6 is public minutes of the previous meeting on 26th of July 2023. I propose the approval of the public minutes from the previous meeting. Do I have a seconder? Thank you. Councillor Gold, thank you very much. We will now go to the vote. All those for? Thank you. Any against? Any abstentions? Lovely. Thank you. Have we got that? Lovely, thank you. Okie dokie, thank you for that. Item 7, Climate Change Action Plan. At this point, then, we're very pleased to have Climate Adaptation Officer, Mr. Mark Jeffcote, gentleman there. Yeah, thank you. Hello, nice to meet you, thank you. And also Mr. John Teasdale, Head of Legal and Regulatory Services and Monitoring Officer, for a presentation. I take it there'll be a chat for questions for the presentation. Is that how you want to do it?
So, Chair, Mark is going to spearhead this presentation for us now. Obviously, here to assist afterwards.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So. Start with a bit of background. The ESBC climate emergency. The council declared the climate emergency a climate emergency back in 2020, and as a result, set itself 2 aims. Firstly, to make the council's activities carbon neutral by 2040, and then make the borough carbon neutral by 2050. Climate change and nature recovery are now considered in all council decisions, strategies, policies and plans as a result. So just to set some context for climate change work in the borough, the slide upon the screen is the council's net zero strategy, which the government published a few years back. This document forms the context for everything that we do locally, because it contains some quite significant actions, such as banning petrol and diesel vehicles, banning gas boilers, decarbonising the electricity grid by putting in place large wind farms out in the North Sea. These types of actions are the types of actions that we need to get to net zero, but we don't have the power to implement locally. So we very much are depending on government to do its part. And so I'll just say a little bit about the latest CO2 emissions. We report the CO2 emissions on an annual basis. The borough-wide emissions, the data comes in from central government, but the council's own estate and operations, we actually calculate the emissions ourselves. So to the borough CO2 emissions, since the base year of 2005, we've seen a very healthy 44% reduction in emissions. These borough-wide emissions are broken down approximately a third transport, it's mainly car use, a third domestic energy, gas central heating systems, and then another third, which is a combination of industry and commerce. So, onto the council's CO2 emissions. Again, since the base year of 2009/10, we've seen a very healthy 40% reduction in emissions. And as for the origin of the council's own emissions, 43% of them come from outsourced services. So that's mainly the Everyone Active leisure facilities and then the fuel used in the ID Verde vehicle fleet for grounds maintenance. Of that 43%, 38% are associated with the leisure facilities. Another 38% comes from diesel and petrol use in the council's own vehicle fleet. And then finally, 18% comes from gas and electricity use in the council's corporate buildings. Staff business travel in own vehicles, that's the grey fleet, accounts for approximately 1%, so it's fairly insignificant. So on to the Climate Change and Nature Action Plan. The action plan contains six sections. Four of the sections are taken from the Climate Change and Nature Strategy, which was published last year. The A1 from the Climate Change and Nature Strategy is to protect climate from man-made climate change. A2 is to adapt to the consequences of climate change. A3 is to protect and enhance nature. And A4 is to use resources wisely and minimise waste and pollution. So in addition to those four sections, the Climate Change and Nature Action Plan also contains a fifth section covering cross-cutting actions such as planning and regeneration, and then a sixth section on communication and engagement. The action plan as it stands at the moment contains 63 individual actions. 49 of those are rated as green, 4 are rated as red, and 10 actions have not yet started. In addition, 15 completed actions have been removed from the action plan. So I've got five slides now that look at individual actions within the action plan in a little bit more detail. Do you want me to go through them?
Yes, I'll be useful. Yes,
please.
Thank
you. Okay. So, transport, i.e. electric vehicle charging. So I'll just pull a few of these out. The council has installed EV charging points at Miller's Lane and Stappen Hill staff car parks for use by our vehicle fleet. In addition, 3 public EV charging points have been installed in Cooper Square car park in Burton. And the ESBC climate electric vehicle charging infrastructure strategy has been approved. In addition, we're currently in the process of identifying 4 more EV charging points and also working in partnership with Staffordshire County Council to put in a Levi funding bid for installation of on-street parking. We're also publishing a new web page signposting residents to useful information about electric vehicles. On transport, sustainable and active travel, we're making improvements to the cycle network through the cycling and walking infrastructure plan as part of that, and also as part of the Burton regeneration work. In addition, we're exploring ways to promote active travel, such as cycling and walking, and public transport to residents and visitors. On biodiversity and nature recovery, we're working alongside Staffordshire Wildlife Trust to establish a new visitor centre in the water tower on the Washlands. Our parks have achieved Green Flag status, which includes a biodiversity and nature recovery element. 2,500 native tree species have been planted on our green open spaces. We've introduced relaxed mowing regimes across the council and also planted native wildflowers and pollinator-friendly plants. We're also part of a Great Crested Newt District Licensing Scheme for strategic Great Crested Newt conservation. Going forward, the planning departments are preparing for the new biodiversity net gain requirements from the autumn. We will also be making a contribution to the nature recovery strategy, the county-wide strategy, and that work has just started. And we're currently identifying suitable locations for four carbon capture areas and biodiversity enhancement areas. On buildings and energy, we've introduced a climate change supplementary planning document. We're working in partnership with Staffordshire Warmer Homes and Beat the Cold to deliver energy efficiency measures and advice in vulnerable households. From October, for 1 year at least, the council will move on to a green electricity contract. And at the moment, we're also appointing consultants to produce heat decarbonisation plans for four of the main corporate buildings. In terms of other projects, we're undertaking climate change awareness and carbon literacy training for staff and elected members, reviewing recycling provision in council buildings and continuing our work to reduce single-use plastics, producing a new air quality management plan, continuing to implement our ESBC climate change communication and engagement plan. We're looking to review the procurement policy going forward and strengthen the section on climate change. I'm working with the Staffordshire County Council on a programme of environmental business support funded through the UK Shared Prosperity Fund. So just moving on to the reporting side then, three progress reports on climate change action plan implementation have been completed so far, and currently we report annually to Cabinet. The last monitoring report went to Cabinet in August, and this presentation is very much based on that report. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. That was very interesting, yes. I mean, a lot of that, I hope, will be familiar to people in the room anyway, won't it? Because we have had a fair bit of climate change training. Right. Has anyone got any questions at this point? Yes, Councillor Huckabee.
Today's announcement puts in jeopardy all the data that you just read out. I think we have to start using the correct language. I don't really know how to phrase all this. We have mitigation, which is what you've just been talking about, but we also have adaptation, which effectively is to make our human environment useful to us as it suffers damage from climate chaos. I'll use climate chaos now because I think we're in that situation. Climate change was too wide a grab at it. It should be climate chaos. Now, there's a competition, it should have been a competition, it's been weakened between the resources applied to mitigation, which is, first of all, to take out of the atmosphere that which we've already put in, to move on to reducing what we will be putting in once we've got it under control, and what's in the pipeline currently. That 1.5 degrees C is superseded now by something between 2 and 3 degrees. So, in a sense, prevention is now not the adjective we should be using, it's repair. And mitigation is not now the important aspect, but adaptation. At the end of the day, pressures from the electorate will mean that as they suffer inconvenience, I'll use that word advisedly, there will be complaints and pressures placed on those that have the resources and the authority to do something about it. So when we look at adaptation, I think that is a more serious issue, because the relaxing the standards that we've set previously, 2015 for zero neutral Britain and 2040 for zero neutral council have now been extended. So we have to ready ourselves for the increase in changes or chaos that will come about because of the relaxations being talked about by Prime Minister today. And to quantify those, or to give a contrast, we saw we had an address by the Cabinet Leader on environment, where he suggested his dream, and he's gone public with it, that we should, those deadlines, 2015 and 2040, certainly the 2051, should be brought forward. Now, in bringing it forward, that means resources have to be found to do that. I'm not one to sit here and listen to good old propaganda being floated about just to make myself look good. You know, if it upsets people, then it upsets people. But to publicly declare that you're going to beat what the set points are at the moment, what the plan is all about, it's structured around, that you're going to build that, that you beat that, without any preparation of business costs, excessive resources and money, I think is a little naive. So, where does that leave us? Because it seems to me we call whichever way we go.
Rishi Sunak's made this announcement, hasn't he, about putting back things like the ban on petrol and diesel, and also the ban on gas boilers. They're absolutely fundamental. If you come back to this,
I think the gas boiler is one of the conversion into hydrogen, which some companies are pushing as being the best transfer of gas, of getting away from gas, because the systems, the pipes, etc., etc., don't take too much to modify. I still think, from the information I may have myself to, is that geothermal will end up being the most cost effective and the long term benefit. It's already there, it's constant, and there's no fight between hydrogen vehicles and electric vehicles is already going towards electric vehicles. I think the same with hydrogen, the use of hydrogen will find itself not that beneficial. So in that sense, geothermal stands out like a not sore thumb, because you know, a thumbs up, really.
In terms of ground source heat pumps, are you suggesting? Are you suggesting ground source heat pumps? When you say
ground source heat pumps, down 35 metres, and you can establish a communal system that is pretty beneficial. We could experiment, if we wanted to trial one, if we didn't want to buy into somebody else's experiments, the new development down on the Fargate could have been equipped with geothermal. I did look into equipping it with electricity and heat determined by the weir of the tram, but that's proved the weir is not a good enough differential to provide that sort of thing. But it still remains a particular site or project that could have been equipped with geothermal or whatever. As it is, it's going to stay coupled into the systems which give us the problem that we've got now. So,
yeah.
So for all the sort of to and fro and all the rust and what have you, it really doesn't move us on any further.
And I thought the opportunities were
there. Yes. Sorry, Mick. Yes, Teasel. Councillor Huckabee, I have the most respect for everything that you've just said. I'm right there with you. But I'm not too sure what the question is for Mark. You see, you've gone on a little bit there, and everything you're saying is accurate. It's on the point, but we're supposed to be asking Mark a question here, and you know, we've got to be fair to the chap. He's turned up, he's given us a great presentation. Let's ask him a question.
When are you going to rewrite the current East Staffordshire answer to climate chaos and update it with regard to the current situation we find ourselves in?
That's a big question. I mean, just coming back to the slide, as you can see, we've got approximately a third of the emissions in the borough could come from transport, which is basically cars. That means we have to do away with petrol and diesel. That means we need a ban. The authority doesn't have the power to introduce a ban on petrol and diesel. And the same, we've got approximately a third the orange block from domestic, which is basically gas boilers. Again, we don't have the power to ban gas boilers. So just simply on that. But, and if then we do move across to some kind of electric solution, which is air source heat pumps or even ground source heat pumps, they need electric to drive them. And on top of that, we move across to electric vehicles, which is very much likely for domestic cars and that kind of thing. The hydrogen may well get used for more industrial applications and larger vehicles. But if we do move across to electric, we've got to have a decarbonised electricity grid in order to supply green electricity, and that's going to come from a combination of big wind farms in the North Sea and potentially also nuclear. And that's the basis for the net zero strategy. And I've seen a lot of these documents over the years, and the net zero strategy, I was really quite pleased with the content. I thought to myself, as an environmental person, oh my God, the government have written something that might actually work. So based on the 2050 target date, which has come from the science, so it was all looking kind of okay. And then along comes Rishi Sunak, who's decided he's going to put the dates for some of these bans back, which is a little bit problematic. He's retaining the 2050 target for net zero, which I think is important, but if he puts back the implementation dates for the bans on petrol and diesel and the bans on gas boilers, I don't think he's going to achieve 2050. Because if you put a new gas boiler in say, 2035, and it runs for 15 years, and then, kind of end of its expectancy, 2050, it's gone, it gets replaced by a heat pump. So the timings were all good. He's messed things up by putting the dates back. And the government had also left it very much to the private sector to deliver. So they announced the bans and say to the private sector, right, you guys sort it out. You develop the technology, you put the heat pumps in, you develop the cars. Potentially we've got a role in EV charging, but not much. But it's mainly the private sector. And that was looking quite good as well, because the companies have got the certainty and they're putting in the investment. Now what he's gone and done is undermine business certainty around. So I do think he's made a real mess of it. I do appreciate what you're saying, but in terms of what we can do as an authority, our abilities are really, really quite limited. And if we did want to try and do 2050 by ourselves, so to speak, the costs are absolutely phenomenal. A lot of other more, forward thinking is the wrong word, but ambitious authorities have actually said, right, let's get consultants in and work out how we're going to meet 2040, 10 years ahead of the government. We want to be aspirational, we think it's important. And then as soon as they found out what the figure was, it was stupidly high, the cost, it was just unbelievable. They've all backed away, so a load of authorities that went 2030 or 2040 for their own localities have gone back to 2050, because it's a realisation that you can't do it without government. Some of them, and then they've brought forward the target dates for their own estate and operations, because you've got total control over that. So you can replace your vehicle fleet, and you can do work on your buildings, we've got control over that, but for the 2050 we can't. And I do agree with you your comment about adaptation, it very much gets it takes second place. Everybody concentrates on, you know, CO2 in the atmosphere, not adapting to the consequences. So I think we do need to take the adaptation side a little bit more seriously. The prediction for adaptation, generally speaking, is warmer, wetter winters and hotter, dry summers. So what that means for us is we're going to get more flooding in the winter, and we're going to get more heat waves in the summer. They're the climate impacts. There's all sorts of associated impacts around effects on biodiversity and, you know, effects on effects abroad that are going to have a consequence on the UK. But just coming back to the council's role, we've got very little influence over flooding. It's the Environment Agency who deal with the main rivers, and the county council are the lead flood authority. So our kind of influence over flooding is fairly limited. With heat waves, we have got a kind of influence through planning and regeneration, where we can make sure that the urban centres in particular are designed to deal with heat waves by more tree planting, and then, you know, that kind of thing, and, you know, the way we design the buildings. So there are things that we can do, we've been guilty as well. The work that we've done so far is concentrated on mitigation rather than adaptation, so we do need to look at it a little bit more. So the point about adaptation is taken. Is that okay? I've ranted on a little bit.
Mr. Jeffcoat, Mark, that's fine. Ranting on is fine by me. Yeah. Can I just say something? So, like has been said, there's nothing I disagree with what Councillor Huckabee said. I acknowledge your passion and commitment to all that stuff. My turn now, please. But quite rightly, Mark has got an action plan and things that the council can do, and this is what we need to stress on it. What is it that the council is not doing in their action plan? And that is, for me, what our prime function is. Now, as regards Mr. Sunak's announcements today, which I've not fully heard them yet, but I don't think this necessarily needs to be a sharp political divergence here. I mean, I'm a member of the Labour Party. I'm disappointed that the Labour Party aren't doing as much as they said they initially were going to do. They seem to be moving back their spending targets, didn't they, earlier on, remember? Yeah? Nationally, they did. Good, because I've...
I'm here as a Labour Party member, I come here as...
Yes, but I mean... But absolutely, mate. But I'm just saying, and we mentioned Mr. Sunak here, and I don't want to sort of. For me, the division is between people who are interested in doing something to help or to adapt to climate changes, which are rushing towards us, which are already here in effect, aren't they? As opposed to those who aren't too keen on that idea for whatever short-term political reasons they may have. I'm a resident of Burton for the long term, and after I'm gone, I want this process to work properly and well, and for the council to do as good a job as it can to help our residents. I really do, Mick. That's what we're about. Now, before it's just gone, then what was I going to say next? To that end, I want us to focus principally on what the council is or is not saying it's doing. And that's the main thing. Yes, I mean, what you've said is excellent, Mick, because it gives everyone a good idea, and it's influencing the members here and the officers of all, I hope. And that's a very useful function as well. So, okay. Councillor Gold, I think. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Mark. In terms of the sorts of things you're hoping are going to happen to the council-owned properties, what sort of thing are we going out in terms of our mitigation? What are we looking at to try and improve the buildings to make sure that we're doing the best we can?
Yeah, the corporate buildings. Well, we've got corporate buildings, four of which we own, the big ones. We've got the leisure facilities, and on top of that, we've got a number of community buildings as well. And the government are putting a lot of money into what are called heat decarbonisation plans. So basically, some of the stuff I was talking about, introducing air source heat pumps, PV panels on the roof, putting in LED lighting, all these kind of, and then and then, and then make, making sure that the electricity you buy is actually renewable, and that way around you've kind of decarbonised your building. So we've got some money to appoint consultants to produce heat decarbonisation plans. We're currently appointing a consultant to do the corporate buildings. With the leisure facilities, the contractor, everyone active, they've appointed a consultant called Leisure Energy. So they're doing the same with the leisure facilities, and they're also looking at PV installation on the roof. And then further down the line, we also want to do some work on the community buildings, you know, because it's kind of difficult for community organisations to deal with some of the high energy bills that they've been seeing recently. Once we've got these heat decarbonisation plans written, then we can put a bid into central government to get the funding to do the works. That's basically the process. So we'll take a little bit of time, but we will get there eventually. Yeah. So we're looking basically electrifying the buildings. That's it.
Thank you. Before I bring Councillor Jones in, I'm going to add something to that, Mark. In the foyer, just along here, there's a very 2019 energy performance certificate for the building.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, why is it 2019? Why has it not been updated since? It's rather old.
Yeah.
And surely, if you are doing this, this is something that I want really to sort out.
I suspect it's got an expiry date on it.
Right. So we're not applying for another one. Not done another survey. Not.
We'll need to be renewed. It's a legal requirement to have the energy performance certificate.
Yes.
So I'll take a look at that just to check.
Yes, please. Because as Mick says, this is a massive problem, and we've got to be seen to be doing the right thing as well, aren't we? As well as actually doing it. Thank you. Yes, Councillor Jones.
Thanks, Mike. Because basically, we're looking at the Climate Change Action Plan, and anybody that has been really interested in this, that have asked for a copy of it, have always been really impressed with it. They thought we've been doing really well with this action plan, and we've actually been reviewing that. I think it's been reviewed 3 times, you said, for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think really, our role is if we can look at something that is missing or something more that we can do, that we can suggest, that's going to help East Staffordshire deliver its objectives, then I think that is our role.
Yeah.
We can't solve the problems of the world here, I'm afraid. We can't certainly solve the problems of China and India and various other places like that.
Yeah.
What we can do is work really hard in East Staffordshire and with our council buildings, and I'm sort of really pleased to see that what we're doing here.
Thank you. The critical thing with the action plan, it's got to have the right actions in to make sure that you meet your net zero aspirations by the target date, but the implementation as well. So the actions are in there. We need to make sure they're delivered.
To be honest, lots more residents have been shown an interest in it and asked me where they can find it, where they can see what we're doing and what have you over recent times. And they've always come back and said that they're impressed with both the document as the plan and the actions that we're taking. Really good. Yeah.
Reassuring to know. Thanks.
Yeah. Right. Again, if I might ask another question, please. So Mark, what is the most difficult part of the action plan from your point of view? Does this follow on a bit from what Mick's question is? So it's adaptation, isn't it? You told us already.
Yeah. In terms of the sections, really, I've said there's a lot of things that the council can't do, but what we have to do is concentrate on the areas where we have got influence. So what services do we deliver that are going to be able to change the situation?
Yeah.
And say, for example, we're a planning authority. We've got a local plan, and planning policy's got teeth. Some of the big spend in the borough is around regeneration. We have a lot of control over the outputs of regeneration projects. There are other services that we deliver. There's waste management, for example. We're a waste collection authority, so we do recycle. So it's about concentrating. It's about maximising our available resource. To get the kind of maximum book for the effort we can put in. So we don't want to get distracted off onto projects that might take a lot of time, but not necessarily have much of an environmental benefit. I'm off the top of my head, you know, disposable nappies. I know. they're not very pleasant, but to be quite honest, trying to put in a scheme to deal with, you know, kind of throwaway nappies, it would take a long time, and the climate change benefits would be fairly limited, to be quite honest, compared with, you know, some other work we could do around, like regenerational planning, or, you know, the way we use our own land holding and that kind of thing.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Forgive me, do you think the rest of the council, or your other departments, are as committed to this as you obviously are? Or do you think they sometimes don't quite get it, or think it's a pigeonhole that they haven't got to worry about?
Yeah, we know within East Staffordshire.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, not at all. No, there's nobody.
Okay, at that point, I'm going to ask a question now. It's going back to process a little bit, perhaps. But I've got the printed copy of the current Climate Nature Action Plan,
yeah.
And domestic energy use in the borough, and it's talking about the energy efficiency standards in private rental accommodation, which you mentioned, and beating the cold and that sort of stuff. And I just did notice that there's been a recent executive decision record about this, dated the 18th of August. This is Cabinet Member, I think it's Simon Slater, John Deary, and it was presented to the Health and Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee, which is very good, because obviously, you know, people living in warm, nice houses is a very good thing. But for some reason, it's not been presented to us. I mean, there's nothing in here that I think we would object to. But I mean, I'm wondering, you know, why? I mean, if you've not, obviously we can all look at other people's agendas and see the stuff. But you know, if it is such a major part of our climate action plan, and it evidently is, evidently very important, you know, I just wonder why we weren't given this document, or members here weren't given it more formally, perhaps, to talk about. I did speak to Tom Hadley, who does the who chairs the Health and Wellbeing Committee, and he said that it was read, but no one made any comments about it. I mean, we might not want to make a comment about it, but we haven't been given the choice, have we? It seems like there's a slight disconnect there in thinking. I don't know who decides who sees what executive records or who doesn't do it, but thank you.
Chairman, each executive decision record, to the bottom of the front sheet, it will say which the officer completing it. It's probably on the second page. And it's the officer should indicate which scrutiny committee it should be.
Yes.
It can be more than one, but we go off the information that's provided within that executive decision record.
Thank you. Well, it's only, as far as I can read, it went to Health and Wellbeing Committee.
Because that's what was indicated on the record provided to us.
So again, please forgive me. I'm very new to the council. So is this decided by the cabinet member or by an officer, or how does that work?
It's a cabinet member signed off by the
yes. I will be writing a sign about it as well, but yeah. Thank you. Oops, I beg your pardon. Was it Councillor Jones? Thank you.
So I'll ask a question. Thank you. Is there any benefit in sort of combining the Air Quality Action Plan with this? Because that's obviously a benefit that is really something that is not visible, but you know, can quantify. And I just wonder, that seems to be quite separate, the Air Quality Action Plan, and I just wonder why they haven't been integrated is that a difficulty or something?
Yeah, there's obviously a big overlap between transport, you know, the climate change impact, but it's the main, you know, kind of source of localised air pollution. The air pollution agenda tends to come very much more from the public health side, just about, you know, the health impacts of things like oxides of nitrogen and particulates. We regularly talk to the environmental health colleagues who deal with air quality. We're having a conversation with them at the moment about a bid that they're putting into through the county council for some electric buses. So there is overlap. Whether or not there's much of a call for combining our climate change strategy and action plan.
Well, we do have an air quality action plan, don't we?
Yeah, and it does need to be rewritten. And
yeah.
That's one of the red actions in
the climate change action plan.
We're waiting for some information to come back in from county as the highways authority. they need to do their bit before we can complete our air quality action plan.
Right.
So there is big overlap with air quality, and we do talk to them a lot.
I just wonder whether it's considerate for councillors to consider both of those together rather than as totally separate things. This would be beneficial, really. I don't know what
people
think.
We could take that way and have a discussion.
Okay.
I think a lot of the air quality stuff is driven by legal requirement, which isn't in the case of climate change.
Yeah.
You know, climate change is disaster, one of the most significant threats to the planet, if not the most significant. There's no legislation, you know, whereas things like food hygiene and air quality and the stuff that's come up through environmental health is all covered by legislation. So,
yes, Council could be.
The point there about the measure of environmental things and climate change things is that you solve one and you automatically solve the other, because the pollution emitted by petrol engine, diesel engine, or whatever, contributes to what's going on up there.
Yeah.
Solve that one by eliminating this, and the environmental bit is taken care of.
Yeah, it's the kind of co-benefits idea. Yeah, we do consider that. If you look at, just come back to the climate change, the six sections in the Climate Change and Nature Action Plan, you'll see the fourth one, which is aimed for from the climate change strategy. The climate change strategy is on the website if anybody wants to take a look at that. It does need updating. I only wrote it a year ago. And it does make reference to 1.5 degrees, which it's looking a little bit, you know, kind of sketchy as to whether or not we'll achieve that now. But aim for, or section four in the action plan, is to use resources wisely and minimise waste and pollution. So the climate change action plan has got some air quality actions under, you know, kind of section four, which is aimed for from the strategy. What I could do, it might be beneficial, the members of this group community, if I email them directly a copy of the action plan, I can just fire an email off, and everybody around the table can have one. You know, to I've got some hard copies here if anybody prefers hard copy.
Is that the you've got the old one, haven't you? Is that the new one of the system looks like this, isn't it?
That's the
new one. That's the current one, isn't it?
Is that, did you take it off the website?
Yes, I thought it was the website. Yeah.
Yeah. The difference with this one is
it's got comments down there. Yeah.
Yeah. This one's got the rag rating.
Right.
Comments.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's probably the better one.
So this one would be on the internet, wouldn't it?
That's probably the one that went to Cabinet. The Cabinet report contained lots of recommendations. I've since kind of implemented the Cabinet recommendations after they were agreed and produced this version.
Right.
So this is a slightly more up-to-date one than that.
And we will find this where, or you can email it to us.
I'll email this one to you.
Okay.
Which is the one I finished messing around with the other day, to be honest.
Right. Okay.
And that's the one that's on the website.
The one on the website hasn't got the rag rating or the comments.
So that's the
update column, which is particularly important for you and your scrutiny role, I think.
Okay. Right. Yes.
Picking up on John's earlier points about question, there should always be questions for officers. But this is a scrutiny committee, so it's not just a case of asking a question and receiving an answer. Scrutinising comes in the answer that's given to us, and that might well lead to what might seem to be going on a bit, what have you. The answer to the point about, you know, are we doing very well and what have you, this is the way we should be going. Again, this is a scrutiny committee. We're not interested in whether we're doing very well or not as a council. We're only interested in pulling apart, ripping to pieces, trying to improve what the Cabinet has produced. Now, the Cabinet produces what it does using the officers as its workforce, and they attempt to match the results of the officers to implement what's in here. Now, the scrutiny committee has nothing at all to do with that. it has nothing at all to do with what the officers have been working on as instructed by the Cabinet. Our interest is to take what the Cabinet offers using as policy and as actions for the work to be done. Our job is to scrutinise that. So if that becomes emotional at times, embarrassing at times, controversial at times, it's not meant personally. I've run into problems about getting too emotional about certain aspects of, and John will know this, of things where I've hit a brick wall and there seems to be no way around it or over it. And that tends to bring frustrations. Now, those frustrations, sort of frustrations, will also be evident in this committee if it gets to the level of scrutinising, because it will find that this issue is so fast moving that we've already made the suggestion that everything is revised every quarter. Because of the fast moving situation that the climate chaos has. Question there. You mentioned about the winters you expect and are preparing for.
Yeah.
I'll ask you if you're sure that is the case, that you've got the right weather patterns. I'll back that up by inviting you to comment on the fact that the Greenland ice shelf is melting at such a rate that the fresh water being deposited to the North Atlantic is drowning some people, if you use the word, the Gulf Stream. Other people say pushing it further south. Other people say pushing it down to the bottom. Now, the importance of that is that it's only the Gulf Stream which protects the winter climate over Britain from suffering severe Siberian effects, because that's always pushing against it, and the hot air from the Gulf Stream below it pushes back, and that's what gives us our mild winters. Now, that is occurring now, and it's accelerating. And we saw evidence of it last year with the name of, comically, the Beast from the East, and I think it occurred twice. That is severe cold, whether it comes as snow, whether it comes as ice, whether it comes as rain. It's incidental, it's the low temperature base, the bit that will affect people of East Staffordshire. How we deal with that is different from a winter which has more water and it's not so cold, because then it brings into view the pledge made in, again, the election manifesto of insulating houses. There comes a difference there, because the new estates are insulated up to a standard, possibly not so much, but where I live, and probably 7,000 other houses in Burton, are not insulated at all. They're single brick thickness.
Mick, I'm sorry. So you're asking Mark, has he got a handle on the weather predictions that we're going to expect? Is that the question?
Frontally, have we got the right analysis?
Oh yes. I mean, I'm forgive me. I'm sure this is not, well. Thank you, Mark. There you go. That's the question.
Yeah, the information comes from the Climate Change Committee. They do regular.
Yeah.
You know, adaptation assessments, and information is then fed through the West Midlands Adaptation Plan that was produced by Sustainability West Midlands. It's work that other people have done, you know, kind of good scientists, and we just use the you know, the predictions that they provide for us. So I think that's pretty robust, actually.
I'm sure we've got to keep a close eye on this, haven't we? Because it is changing, and I've noticed weather forecasts aren't as local weather isn't as reliable as it used to be, is it? So we've got to keep changing this, and we've got to sort of think, you know, what are we going to do when the situation is worse than we think it's going to be? So I'm hoping you've got that in your head, yeah?
We'll just be reviewing it every time the climate change, you know, kind of committee bring out a new report, a new assessment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just responding to the Councillor Huckabee, I just think it would be better for the Scrutiny Committee and our councillors if we could keep things a bit more concise, because I think we lose the thread sometimes in terms of what's being asked. I say that with the utmost respect. And in terms of what the Scrutiny are here for, it will be going to part, I won't read out to you, councillors, part 3LD of the Constitution that highlights the purposes of the purpose of the committee. Not that I'm suggesting we're doing anything wrong or off topic, I'm just saying if you want a refresher, it's there in the Constitution. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for Mark at this point then? Anybody else want to say anything else?
Just saying, in terms of those types of global problems and you know the difficulties we decide how to respond as a council, there's a really good, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but there's a really good documentary on Netflix fronted up by Sir David Attenborough called Breaking Boundaries. If you want to know about the global situation, watch that documentary. It's a guy called Johan Rostrom from the Stockholm Environment Institute, who's done some fantastic work around, you know, all these boundaries that we have as you know, as a society, as a humanity, that we can't, you know, that we can't go over, things like climate change and ocean acidification, nitrogen, phosphorus, ozone, species extinction, etc. And he's done a really, really good piece of analysis presented in this documentary. So if you want to get up to speed, you know, I can't swear, can I? Because what a mess we're in. I've watched that documentary. I've not suggested it to my work colleagues yet, but I will do next time we're in a team meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, Breaking Boundaries on Netflix.
Forgive me, people. I think what we're saying, everyone in this group is committed, aren't they, to this and is aware, and it's a very big problem, and that we've got to expect a lot worse to come our way. And we, you know, if we can make an impact, we can do something that helps the council work better, then that's what we've got to do into it.
Going back to the issues around domestic, Councillor Huckabee mentioned, I also live in a ward where there is a struggle around keeping houses warm and keeping homes warm, and we're already getting residents feeling the strain in anticipation of a cold winter and even colder winter. You mentioned Beat the Cold. Could you elaborate on what they're doing and how that is being rolled out within East Staffordshire?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a particular project that I'm working on personally. It's more my line manager, Rachel, who does the work with Beat the Cold. But they provide a one-stop shop advice service for vulnerable households, you know, giving them advice around, you know, kind of energy management, also debt advice, and it also kind of extends into, you know, funding for practical, you know, kind of practical changes to the properties, like the installation of air source heat pumps, you know, insulation, double glazing, loft insulation, double glazing, so all that kind of practical stuff, you know, where the money can come from, and you know, how's the best way to get that kind of work, get that kind of work done. So yeah, it's the kind of one-stop shop service, really. If, I mean, if you want more information, I'll speak to Rachel and.
That's fine, thank you. Is that through the Warmer Home Scheme?
The Warmer Home Scheme runs in parallel, and that's where some of the funding comes from. Okay. The Warmer Home Scheme is much more about the practical stuff, so, you know, the loft insulation and the double glazing and the air source heat pumps and that kind of thing. That's the money to do that kind of thing. But I think the Cold also had all these advice services around debt, you know, and you know, kind of, you know, kind of practical ways to change the way you use your house to make it warmer, you know, fuel poverty, that kind of thing. So, but there's the fact that we haven't got a national housing retrofit programme in this country is an absolute scandal. You know, the houses are in, some of the older ones are in terrible condition. From an energy conservation point of view, and the various governments have been messing at it for years and not done anything. So it is a scandal.
Thank you, Mark. Will you pass that to Monica, please? That's the EDR. Keep that. That's a bedtime reading for you, Monica. There you go. That's the EDR. So read that amongst other things. Yeah, my copy. It's on the, everyone else, that's on the internet. If you go on the Health Wellbeing Committee, you can find that document. put your oil copy right. Yes.
Just to say as well, in terms of the public EDRs, they're all publicly available, so they're all on all on the website and through the internet as well. So not they're not just limited to streets and counties. I really just mention it in terms of it's a useful resource, as you've sort of alluded to there, for considering scrutiny. So we've talked before about when we're skipping ahead perhaps to the scrutiny review programme, but when we're thinking about items that we want to scrutinise, these kinds of documents, along with the corporate plan and the forward plan, etc., are useful resources to help us with our thinking.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Thank you. Any more questions for Mark? Or can I ask a final one? Right. I've got a sticky labels on my list here. Here we go. Here you go. So climate action, nature plan. This is section 6.12, form a cross-party members group to discuss strategies and actions going forward. And is that us? Are we the cross-party group?
No.
So who is that then? Who is that? Sorry.
I don't think that group has been established yet.
All right.
There was an attempt. Again, it's my line manager Rachel who's leading on it with support from the other climate change officer Sharon. So I think there was an early attempt to generate some interest, but I don't think it's progressed.
I'm wondering if the people in this room are that cross-party group, perhaps. Okay, I mean, is there a staff one? Has the staff got a group established yet?
In the process of setting that up as well.
Oh,
well
yeah.
I mean, you have to get people to volunteer time to come along to it.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions? No? Right. Well, thank you very much. That's been very interesting. Thank you for your input. I hope it's not been too much of an ordeal for you. Thank you kindly. Now then, we'll go on to item 9 then. Public executive decision. I can't read my own notes here. So, with that in mind, then, we're now going to item 8, which is scrutiny review programme. Scrutiny review programme. And as members here will know, I've been sending out emails over the last since the last meeting, and I was trying to. Thank you for all your comments, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for what you've written. It's all been very interesting. I hope you found it interesting and informative, and it adds to our debate. I suppose I was really hoping for some overwhelming consensus of opinion, such as, shall we investigate this? That hasn't quite appeared. So, with the benefit of what we've just been told from Mark, is there anything, any programme in particular, anything you think this committee should be doing scrutiny review programme-wise? Yes, yes, Councillor Huckabee.
Yes, that's fantastic, as you've provided. Use that, great cost. I think the early days of this committee are going to be concerned with the current policy changes, if there are any policy changes, of the new administration. I've already said that my position is non-political, in the sense I don't see the divisions on climate change or the environment as being left or right. I see it as more of a different split, and I think it comes down to resource and direction of resource. Just as in brackets there, I did write to the leader of the council regarding the investment that this East Staffs for a Council made in support of somebody else's work. The work was taking place on the Washlands to the tune of something like, I think our contributions were something like £3 million. And what I wondered aloud was, is this in the tight financial situations that we have nationally and probably locally, does this need reviewing? Not in the sense of stopping it, but realising the scarcity of funds that might be discovered when we come to actually do some adaptation work, which might resolve itself in the spend of a few million pounds. And if we caught short because we've spent it on a boggy field over there, which does nothing to protect the environment that people actually have to live in, then it would be a dereliction of duty to have done that. The resistance I received to that idea gave me a measure of the resistance that the status quo has towards these oncoming effects. Now, I know them to be true, other people believe them to be true, and some people believe it's a load of poppycock. And that is the battle which we...
Is there some investigation then we can do to stress this point? Is that what you're proposing?
We need to quiz officers about, I guess it's officers, because if we quiz the cabinet, I don't think.
I'm sorry, it's a policy decision. It's not something that we
have
to.
Am I expecting all of us to find common ground and push for better policy decisions and activities that the officers are then committed to? That's what scrutiny is for me. I mean, I attended as a public member many scrutiny committees, and I thought them to be just backslapping exercises, and was quite disgusted with the ease with which people got away with their describing their situations. No, scrutiny to me is scrutiny. You look at what people are presenting to be done, and if those don't measure up to what each individual believes to be the case or the group, then you must say so. Otherwise, what is the point of it? So I think, you know, in answer to your question, what should we be looking at? We should be looking at what the council is doing at the moment, measuring it against a fast evolving situation, and recommending answers or suggestions of where we should change or how we should react to the different changes as they occur.
Forgive me, is there a specific area you're concerned about, the washland development? Is that what, or the washland improvements?
No, I'm not interested in the washland development at all.
From your comments earlier on to Mark, we are in a way challenging all of it, aren't we? We're challenging the whole climate action plan, aren't we? We're challenging everything. But I mean, is there a particular aspect that we? I'm thinking as a way of demonstrating this, can we find a particular aspect or topic we can focus on and present a report to the full council saying we've investigated this item of the action plan or this item of policy and we've come up with these conclusions?
Okay, if you want a specific, the sewerage system outside your front door.
Yeah, okay.
Which we know is incapable of taking away the stuff when it rains a little bit too much.
Yep.
And whether that is endemic across Burton or whether it's
okay.
not. Because
okay.
If it is insufficient to deal with what is becoming increasingly more frequent, then we're going to have dysentery quite widespread. Mm-hmm. And so we need to know these things. Now, it might be in relationship to other organisations, but there's an interconnected here in our civilisation that we can't just put a barrier up and say that's their business, that's our business, and the two watch can't meet. There was no mention of the Staffordshire Sustainability Group, which has been formed, of which every council, every local council is a member and what have you. I've not heard anybody yet mention it. None of the deliverance people who've come to it mention. So I don't know what's going on there, and I don't know whether that interconnectedness.
If we choose that as a topic, we could certainly add that in, couldn't we? Yeah. So anybody else with clear, with specific suggestions for what we could investigate or propose? Forgive me. I know previously yourself, Mick, and Councillor Ashcroft is not here. We're talking about energy provision and them sort of things. And I know Monica mentioned education, didn't you? Yeah. Anything you want to say about that?
No, they're just working within the community, I still feel there's a real lack of understanding and ignorance around climate change in general within the education system. So I'd like to see that reviewed, introduced as much as we have control to, and if not directly through schools, then certainly community groups, and perhaps mention of parish councils as well.
Okay, and do you think we could devise a programme for doing that out there, or present a way that the council could implement that?
Yeah, my observation really, Councillor Jones mentioned the air quality action plan, and I've not read it, but I will do, because instantly what that gives to me, and certainly residents that I've dealt with over the years and within my ward, is almost an immediate insight and understanding into how climate change affects them, perhaps a lot more than talking about the weather or what's happening in other parts of the world at the moment. It seems to be, I feel that they would be more relatable if we were to talk about air quality, because I know it is an issue within urban wards.
Okay, yep.
Yeah,
that's fine.
People suffering considerably with asthma, chest-related and related illnesses.
Yep, splendid. Anybody else? Councillor Bailey talked to me recently about waste management in India and dog waste and such like.
Thank you,
Chair. What do you want to say about that?
I did send an email this afternoon about waste management issues that I find quite concerning, and I would like to be included in a review, in a scrutiny. So I'm not going to repeat myself.
Okay. Thank you. I'll try to put you on the spot, but I'm trying to get people to input these. But thank you very much,
Councillor. I hope that everybody received that.
Yes, everyone received that. We've certainly got chance to read it. I know, again, you mentioned it before, didn't you?
Thank you.
Anybody else want to say anything else? Councillor Jones, that's the gold.
I think the education issue is really
good. Yeah. I think we have to think global, act local, don't we? We have to take in the rest of the world's own, realise the importance of this, but with attention, perhaps thinking more local or presenting something locally is perhaps an easier way of getting the message through to people to start with. For my own thing, I'm going to re-echo a little bit what Mark told us about retrofitting of houses, keeping the houses warm and dry and comfortable, which is something I think we could perhaps do more on. So we seem to narrow it down then to four topics, is that right? So we've got flooding and the sewerage system, education in the community and parish council and the community groups, along with air quality, waste management, and retrofitting of domestic properties, which sort of ties in a little bit with the document I gave yourself about the EDR. It's halfway through the year now. We've only got two more meetings left before I feel obliged. We should try and write something to present it to the whole council. We can tell them the discussions we've had, and I'm sure what we've had and what we've said already will influence how the council thinks and operates, perhaps. But we haven't got a lot of time left. Is it sensible to pick two of these things for now and defer the others to later? Is that a sensible idea? Any thoughts on that? Yes, James.
Yeah, just to say. Well, backtracking a little bit to the previous meeting, there were a number of ideas that were circulated. I think we've picked up on most of those. So the climate change action plan, tree planting. So just to say, we've arranged for officers to come to the January meeting to talk to us about tree planting in the borough. So that's in process. We've got that as another presentation to anchor that meeting. We've obviously had the conversation with Mark this evening in terms of the Climate Change Action Plan. Public-owned energy companies, sewage in the Trent, climate change education in schools, the involvement of parish councils regarding climate change, insulation of houses, waste management, recycling, and then harnessing the power of the Trent were all the ideas that were thrown into the mix. At the last meeting, you've got those, a short list, if you like, if we're comfortable with calling it that from what we've spoken about there. We have got the March meeting as well, so I'm wondering if there's one of those ideas there that potentially could be a presentation to anchor the March meeting, to remember what we've had for this evening and for January. So that might be just something, you know, I'm just thinking out loud, it might be something, so one of those ideas might be something that could be dealt with through that kind of approach. And if there's one subject that's a little bit more meaty, then we could look at taking that forward as a more ongoing review.
Okay. So you think we should choose one topic now and add another one for the March meeting? Is that basically it? I mean, that's the time. We've only got so much resource and time.
To build on what you said there, that might be prudent to choose one review that we really get our teeth into, a full full blown report. But that's not to say we can't have additional meetings and for two, you know, maybe we could choose, if it was appropriate, looking at the subject matter, to have a March meeting presentation as well.
Is everybody happy with that idea, members? Does that sound a reasonable sort of approach? Has anyone got any strong objections to that? Yeah, Councillor Gould, yes.
Just following on from what everyone said, really agree with how we engage our community around climate change. So it's not just education in schools. I think it's got to be looked at as the whole community. So from us, through schools, through community groups, the whole gamut of
parish councils,
how we engage our community.
Yeah.
So whether there is something we can do on that and bring in partners and people to just have a discussion on, that would work really well. In terms of the sewage, I think, and sort of the floods, you could have county in to talk about what they do to try and mitigate, or work with Severn Trent to try and see where our problem spots are. We had a meeting where things like that were discussed in terms of trying to get county involved in hotspots where there's regular flooding. So perhaps that is something we can bring a speaker in and ask them questions as part of a whole scrutiny here.
Yeah, that's very good. I did write to Severn Trent about the flooding outside the sewage outside my property a while ago, and I've got answers, but not, I didn't quite get the full sort of gamut that we're on board with this, and this is what we could do, or how we could help you. But I will. I've certainly got a contact point there anyway, so that's useful. Yeah, but yeah. Okay. So, anybody else? Yes, Monica.
Sorry, I'm not sure if this is the forum, and I feel it is. Several residents, obviously, watching the media and the severity of weather in other parts of the world, have asked what is the borough's emergency plan in the event of extreme flooding within the borough. I know Winston, I was speaking to Councillor Smith, unfortunately she's not here today, but they have their own emergency planning within Winslow. That particular spot is almost, it gets very severe in the winter, and you're always sort of grounded in Winslow, so they've had their own sort of contingency plan. Mm-hmm. Is that something that was in the action plan that I missed, or apologies?
Well, we are going to get training, aren't we, on the emergency plans, aren't we? I'm sure we've... I've seen that somewhere, I think I haven't. I'm sure I've seen that. Oh, sorry.
The civil contingency unit. There was some training, I think it was last week, and there's some training for those who've missed it next week.
Yeah.
That's online via Teams. So that's explaining the role of the civil contingency unit and the local resilience forum, which is Staffordshire as a whole.
Yes.
And then we do intend giving a member briefing or an induct sort of tagging on to that later on about emergency planning and the role within Staffordshire.
I'm sure.
Well, no, just to say that there are plans in place for flooding being one. You know, through the civil contingencies unit and within the authority as well, you know, evacuation plans, etc., for dealing with these things. But it's recognised as a key risk in terms of emergency because of the proximity to the River Trent. I know they've done work on the flood defences in recent times as well, but you know, we do have emergency plans in place, not just for flooding but for a range of different things as well, and certainly through the civil contingencies unit. Certain parishes will have their own community-based, you know, plans as well for flooding. So there'll be parishes where there are, you know, particularly high risk, who deal with that as a local level to supplement what's there at a broader level as well. I know the civil contingencies unit are very keen on this idea of community flood plans, so they will be doing a piece of work as we move forward around that. So that would be engaging, you know, parish councils, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think we could refer to their plans in whatever we investigate, can't we? Surely, you know, certainly we are flooding, we can, yeah. And again, I used to do major incident plan in my further job at the hospital a while ago. It's fascinating because you've got to think about any eventuality. So it's a bit like what we're doing now, the climate thing, same, isn't it? You've got to think about any or possible eventualities and how you would cope with this if that bit didn't work or that bit didn't work. So it's really relevant to what we're about, I'm sure. But
we do have a bit more, you know, very much focused on responding to an incident, or planning for an incident and responding to, rather than it being specifically on climate change aspects. So that's just something to bear in
mind. I'm fairly confident the civil contingency, certainly at the hospital, we had plans for heat waves and cold spikes and that sort of stuff, which is all part of it really, and flooding as well for that. But yeah, so it's certainly all involved, isn't it? Right. So am I right then to summarise what we've just said? So are we going to perhaps ask you to watch a meeting for some speakers about flooding and the sewage system? Yeah, is that reasonable? People, are we all happy with that? Yeah. And are we going to ourselves focus on the education an understanding of climate issues through community groups and parish councils and such like, and add the air quality thing into that? Is that what we're going to do, is it? Does that make sense? Can we, is that okay? Can we summarise that in some sensible sentence?
So certainly can put in place, you know, looking at appropriate speakers for a presentation for the March meeting. I think, just for my own clarity, a more detailed review into community engagement mechanisms with, you know, in relation to climate change, you know, aspects. Is that?
Yeah, my understanding. That sounds good. Community engagement mechanisms. That's our committee speaking. Thank you. Sorry, that sounds good. Yeah.
So if that's what the committee are agreeing to take forward, and the first step would be to meet either as a subgroup or as a group of all eight members. So that's another thought. Some committees will, a smaller subgroup of the committee will go away and actually really get the teeth into it. We need to work and report that into the broader committee. So that's up to you as a committee how you want to play it. But the first step will really be to scope out exactly what it is we want to get from that broad thinking that we've come up with there. Put the meat on the bones in terms of the scope of that review, and then do the review thereafter. You know, absolutely. So I'm happy to coordinate that. Just perhaps a thought around whether or not we want to do that. So then we'll be meeting informally, if you like, between committee meetings to take this piece of work forward, usually by a Zoom meeting between times. But again, it's up to you whether you want to do it as a, you know, volunteers or whatever for a smaller subgroup or the full group getting together.
What do you think, members? A small subgroup or all of us to get on some Zoom meetings and add thoughts into that? Yes,
thank you. I am already in one subgroup in one of the other committees, Value for Money. So if I am going to be in another subgroup or another or other subgroups, then it may be
okay. Maybe too much work. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
but obviously, that's only my opinion.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that other people may quite like this idea because it gives us the opportunity to focus on one particular issue rather than talk about many various issues during one meeting.
Because of our workload, I can well imagine that there's always a very good reason why we can opt out of certain aspects of it, but certainly we could still receive reports or progress reports of these groups, and we can still add our comments in as well, can't we? And if we have any information, then I'm sure whatever group is formed will be grateful to receive that. We're all inquisitive and clever people, aren't we? So yes, Michael, yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. So then, a subgroup on community engagement methods then would be what? Monica, me, Councillor Jones? Yeah? Somebody else? Okay. Nikki, thank you. Okay, yeah. Is that okay? Yeah?
Yeah, we were just volunteering Councillor Smith in her absence.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, but really, okay, fine. In that case, then, yeah. In that case, Mark.
Well,
that's if she wants to be on. Well, ask firmly if she wants to be on that, yeah. Okay. I mean, my personal method of doing Zoom meetings is to do the free ones only last 40 minutes. Because you have as many Zoom as you want, can't you? But you've got to focus your minds into doing it and do it all by email. But I mean, I don't mind joining in on that, unless, of course, you want to speak for longer than that.
Well, if you've got an email channel that you can do,
yeah,
we can focus
in
on things and then have the meeting and just
fresh
about
it,
and then
Ben
James
up
to do some work.
Okay.
So
okay.
Sean off to do some work. Okay. No, absolutely. I think I just said, but what we would do is we'll appoint an officer, myself or Sean, or one of the team, to support the committee as a research officer, help you with some, you know, guidance on scoping out the review, etc. Obviously, it's member led, so we're there to help you do the scrutiny, but we'll have somebody there to guide you through that and support with coordinating meetings, setting up the Zooms, advising on the reports, etc. as well, in terms of structure, etc. Yeah. So we're happy to help with that. And we can, if we want to confirm subgroup membership after the meeting by email, that's absolutely fine as well. If we want to confirm,
of course. By all means, review your commitments, and if you think then you can't fit it in, then by all means, we shouldn't be bullying people into doing things, should we? But
recognise there are two members here that aren't with us this evening, so they might want to.
They may well indeed. Yes,
we'll contact them.
They may well indeed. That's true. Yes, that's quite right. Yes. Okay then. I've got some contact with Severn Trent about the flooding and sewage issue. Well, hopefully I have anyway. And then we'll leave that for the March meeting, yeah? Right. Okay, thank you for that, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. So, any more? Yes, yes.
It's a general question, really, about we have all these investigations into certain aspects of what our brief is. What is the effect of those, or what is the power of those? Where do they go from here? Do they go to the cabinet? And does the cabinet have to at least answer them, or do they disappear into a...
Well, that is my understanding, and that is our, forgive me if I've got this wrong. I thought part of the scrutiny business is perhaps to suggest policy, isn't it? I heard the phrase that a question raising scrutiny influences further up or further down or across, isn't it? So it's expectation of it doing something useful. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So just to clarify in terms of process. So if we were to do this piece of work as we've alluded to there, the end product would be a report. If it was a subgroup, that the subgroup would bring that report to the committee. The committee would vote on that report as a final piece of work, accept it or not as a committee. So essentially, we would be voting that through as a, this is a report of this committee, in the normal democratic way. That will then be presented to the cabinet, the report should have, if it's done well, would have recommendations in there to say this is what we recommend as a committee. That would then be presented, usually through the chair presenting that directly to the cabinet meeting, and then it's there for the cabinet to accept or otherwise in terms of those specific recommendations that we post.
And would this process be confidential until the point of adoption or rejection? Or would it be confidential all the way through and would only be seen by us as an admission from the cabinet?
So to make it clear,
in political terms, what we suggest might not be sensitive, and on rejection we might react badly to that.
So I'm just
going
to see
what needs to be done.
So to be clear, just to clarify again, in terms of the process, executive members aren't involved in the scrutiny process. They cannot be involved in the scrutiny process. That's for this committee to do. In terms of confidentiality, it depends on the report. There are exemptions within the Local Government Act to say things may or may not be presented in a public forum. So we will be having conversations through this committee as a piece of work progresses. If they are confidential conversations, they would be confidential conversations. But in the normal way, most meetings, the default will be it's a public conversation. So that's available to all. But an executive member will not be involved in the scrutiny of any particular subject. And then the final report will be presented to them through the normal report clearing process, so through a corporate management team into then the cabinet finally.
What about the involvement of lay members who are not part of the scrutiny? I mean, we're going to have pretty informative individuals come in here and lay before us the facts about the situation. Would it not be beneficial, or is it possible that it would be beneficial to lay members on the council, other than those who you've described already? Is there that degree of flexibility?
The scrutiny will be undertaken by members of this scrutiny committee.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Any more on this? Splendid. Thank you very much. Right. Okay. Item nine again. Public executive decision records. A list of public executive decisions have been circulated with the agenda. Does anyone have any questions on any of these? I've got them in here under somewhere. Where did I get? Is that right? Losing it now. Private executive decisions. Have I got the list there? Is that the one? We've got just the one about stray dogs. Have we stray dog service contract? Is that it? Have I got that wrong? Is that the private one? Is it?
So there's one under the public EDR there. It's the EDR number 030.23, appointments to outside organisations.
Oh yeah.
Happy to take those.
Yeah. Any comments about that one then? I've seen that one, yeah. Noted. Any questions, comments about it? No? No? Splendid. Thank you very much. Thank you. Right. The date of the next meeting, it says the 11th of January 2023. This is when the people are going to talk about the tree planting, aren't they? We've got to get the officers of the council talking to us about that. And we now go on to item... Oh, sorry. Yeah, happy with that? Item 11 now, Corporate Plan Performance Report Quarter 1. The Programmes and Transformation Officer will now provide a performance report for Quarter 1 regarding the corporate plan. So we've got the document here, haven't we? So over to Sean. Thank you for inviting Sean.
Thank you, Chairman. So as you know, the Council's performance focused on three main areas, which is corporate planning, leisure services and the Towns Fund programme. This is the update for the quarterly performance report for the first quarter of the current financial year. The other two areas will be discussed later in this meeting. So far this year, performance across the Council's corporate targets has been strong, as referenced in this report. There are 132 indicators in total for the five corporate priorities. Of these, 82 are rated green, 6 amber, 0 red, and 44 are not yet due to be reported. Of the 88 live targets, 93.18% are rated as green and 6.82 are rated as amber, and there are 0 rated as red. Within the report, Table 1, which is a paragraph 5.2, provides a breakdown of the number of targets in each category using the definitions which you'll find at paragraph 5.1. Full performance information on all corporate indicators can be seen in Appendix 1. However, a summary of the percentage and the number of performance indicators for each corporate priority is shown in Table 2 at Paragraph 5.3. Paragraph 5.4 and Table 3 list 6 targets which have been highlighted as in danger of falling behind target, with an update for each of these provided for you. There's one recommendation of the report, which is to consider performance at the end of the first quarter of this financial year towards achieving the Council's corporate priorities, leisure services contract and Towns Fund programme. So in summary, across this quarter, the performance has been strong, as over 93% of indicators identified as on target and zero identified as red or off target. Concludes the report. Back to you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So straight away, I noticed then that from July there were 120 green, 1 amber, and 7 red. So obviously we've improved. The 7 red seem to have gone. Is it sensible to ask what have we done to get rid of the 7 red ones into amber? Is that a daft question?
I think we're crossing over two different corporate plans there, aren't we? So those 7 reds are the year-end report, I think, from the previous financial year.
Oh, I see. Corporate plan report at the end of year. So
what Sean has presented there this evening is
the quarterly report
of the current corporate plan covered
by right. April. Yes, I beg your pardon. I read that wrong. Thank you. Okay. Okay. So any questions? Members about the corporate plan report the quarterly report you just heard then, anything you want to say about that? Yes, Catherine.
Yeah, can I pose a question in relation to reference CRSO1, the licence and enforcement activities CCTV? As mentioned earlier, I live in represent a ward with a high number of flight tipping, around a particular park. And just notice here, obviously, that we're still waiting for BT, just an update on where we are with that, because it's reoccurring and, poses quite an issue.
Thank you,
Councillor Halton. In terms of the CCTV in Burton, that's up and running. There have been some slight delays with the CCTV in New Toxteter because of the equipment and the different parties involved. But if there is a problematic area, then we have mobile CCTV which can be deployed as well. It's not covert, but we'll put signage up to say that there's CCTV in the area, and we can put it in the top of a tree or at a particular location with a camouflage if we know there's a problematic area. So if you let myself or Margaret know, then we can get something out there and do a deployment. But that's just in case the actual stationary CCTV doesn't cover it. There's CCTV on top of a pole kind of thing.
Okay.
We would just use the mobile CCTV instead.
Okay. Right. So there's mobile CCTV that can be installed in a tree or
area. If there's a problematic area, we usually respond to by installing a camera, and then obviously if it captures any footage, it's not 100% guaranteed that it'll catch a perpetrator.
Yeah,
but if it catches someone, there's usually enough there for us to progress an investigation.
Okay. And with that installation of that mobile CCTV, obviously there's signage which hopefully would act as a deterrent also.
Yes, exactly. And we have to put the signage up, because if we don't put it up, then we engage different legislation, because it becomes covert surveillance, and it's called RIPA. I'm sure you've all heard of it at some point. That as well, yes. But yeah, we put signage up, and it does act as a deterrent, usually.
Okay. Have we found that to be quite effective?
Yes and no. I mean, we've picked up... We've been able to pursue quite a few offences because of the mobile CCTV, but there are a few problems. For example, if somebody kicks down the signage, and like I say, we venture into different kinds of legislation then, and we're like, well, the evidence is useless because we've not gone through the right procedure for covert surveillance. So, but we do have our normal stationary CCTV as well, away from the mobile deployments, and that can be useful. And that's kind of a multi-agency involvement now with the police, hostiles, and what have you. But I think for what you're describing, Councillor Halton, it's probably better to have a mobile deployment, and that can focus on a particular problematic area. So.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Councillor Jones.
planning application for the Washland Visitor Centre gone in yet? But, it's due August 23. It was in danger of falling behind, and I can't remember seeing it go through recently. So, is that going to be read?
Yes. Reminder. I did see it talked about awaiting pre-application advice. Did it? Well, we own a Washland, so are we giving advice to ourselves? That was the question I was going to ask. But, where did I see that? Yeah. Yes, that's RAD 05, isn't it? Yeah.
So I think two points there to make. One is that we'll get an update from the relevant officers as to where they are with the application. I mean, I couldn't say whether it has or hasn't gone in, but we can check that certainly and get a response circulated outside of the meeting. And just to touch on your point there around, you know, giving advice to ourselves, the local planning authority is essentially distinct from us as a local authority, even though it's the same organisation.
Right, all right, okay, you see, yeah. I'm learning stuff all the time. I would never have imagined that, but thank you for that explanation. Thank you. Well, it's going to be the same people, isn't it? Surely, to do it, but I'll be quiet. Right. any more comments about the Corporate Plan Quarterly Report? Anybody else? No? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Right, we've now gone on to item 12, perhaps. We will now have four items to consider in private, so I will now move that in accordance with section 100, brackets A, brackets 4, the Local Government Act, 1972, the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, in view of the nature of the business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there will be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraphs of Part I of Schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets before each item number on the agenda. I will wait for members to. There's no members here, but I will wait for the recording to be switched off. Thank you.